Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob, and today it's going to be a good show because I have special guest Billy Brown, member of the Chicago group, The Shades of Brown, up in here. So he'll be talking about his recording and writing and musical career. So you should definitely stay tuned, as they got a lot of excellent records, which we will be playing and talking about. So first of all, thanks so much for coming down to the studio.
You're more than welcome, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Okay.
So first of all, can you talk about, are you originally from Chicago?
I am originally from Chicago, South Side.
What specific area are you from?
I grew up in the Oakdale Gardens area.
Okay.
My group is originally from Oakdale.
Okay, so how did you originally get involved with music?
Wow. How much time you got?
We got 90 minutes.
Okay. Started like a lot of the performers and entertainers did, singing in the church. Started playing drums at a very early age, about 7 or 8 years old.
How did you get into drums that early?
Just beating on everything.
Okay.
Pots and pans, and then wind up having a set that consisted of a large marching band bass drum.
Okay.
And I would play with the side of my foot. I didn't have a foot pedal. And would tear up all of my mom's coat hangers of useful drumsticks.
Okay.
Okay. And thankfully met Christopher Allen in about sixth grade out on doing resets. And he knew my brother, Andrew. And we were running and playing, and my brother, we call him Dre, he was like, catching Chris. And Chris came and jumped on me, and we started fighting. But we became the best of friends and found out that Chris played the guitar.
Okay.
And was a singer. And we wind up joining forces and wind up doing talent shows all over the city.
So Chris was also from the Gardens?
Yes, he was.
So, and you said you formed, even before high school, you formed a band with Chris and your brother?
Not with Chris and my brother, just Chris and I. We were a duo.
Okay.
And then we my brother wind up coming in with us for a short while, but then we wind up taking on other members, Andre Bell, who is now one of the deans for Northwestern.
Okay.
We had a young lady singing with us at one time, Carolyn Selman, who is now a business entrepreneur.
So what year was that when you were like in the sixth grade starting out? Was it early 60s?
Yeah, early 60s. Matter of fact, later, the late 50s, actually. Had to be early 60s.
So were there other groups at the Gardens at the time that inspired you to make music?
During that time, there were so many groups and single artists that we were involved with from Oakdale Gardens. A lot of entertainers came from that area.
Yeah, I know the group everyone talks about from the 50s was the Debonairs.
The Debonairs, yes.
So did you know they were older than you, right?
But we were blessed to be around all of them. Ralph, all of the Debonairs, George Vineyard.
Okay.
We worked with George for a while, and Odell Carter, who's related to Otis.
Okay.
Okay. Otis Clay.
Okay.
Okay. So these were people that we were blessed coming from the Oakdale community that we were around every day.
Okay. So by the sixth grade, you already formed a duo. You and Chris Allen, who's the same person as Chris Bernard, is that right?
Yes, correct.
And so you said he sang and played guitar.
Yes.
Did you play drums?
I played drums, and then my dad bought my younger brother, Charles, a guitar, and he never played it, so I started asking Chris, show me how to make different chords, and we started working on some stuff, and Chris and I started doing duos on the guitar, doing Everly Brothers songs and different stuff like that, and touring over.
Okay, so when you say touring, what types of places could a sixth grader play in Chicago?
A lot of talent shows, and we would either come up first or second place on a lot of talent shows that we would enter.
Did you have a name for your band at the time?
We went from the Four Trails to the Mentors to the
Well, that was later.
That,
right?
That was a little bit later.
But when you first started out,
when
in
we
talent
first started,
shows,
it was just Chris and Bill.
Okay, and so how did you ended up forming a band or a vocal group initially? Like what happened?
Initially, a vocal group.
Okay,
but we were more or less accompanying ourselves.
So you were like a self-contained.
Self-contained.
And so when did like the first sort of self-contained version of your band form? Was it in high school?
Yes, basically in high school. Matter of fact, just a little pre-high school. Because, like I said, we wind up having Catherine Selman, Andre Bell, Charles Scott became involved. And then we had a couple other people that we were trying out that came in and out.
High school, did you all go to the same school?
Carver High School, yes.
Okay. Were there any other groups in your school at the time?
A lot of groups. Little Ben and the Cheers.
Okay.
Who were kids of the Northley Brothers.
Okay.
Okay, who were one of the world-renowned gospel groups. Pat and the Love Lights came out of Augel.
Were you guys older than a little older than the Love Lights?
Yes, we were. Matter of fact, Chris was instrumental in assisting with getting them recorded. But Pat and them lived directly across the street from me.
Okay,
their family.
So you said you finally formed like your band / vocal group, mm-hmm. Right when you were starting out high school around that time.
Mm-hmm.
What was the initial name of your band that you formed?
The initial name was the Four Trails.
Four Trails.
Four Trails.
What, like one word or two words?
One word.
How do you spell that?
F-R-T-R-E-L-L.
How'd you get that idea?
You know, we were just sitting around trying to think of something.
Okay.
You know, and I really can't tell you right now, you're talking years ago, how we came up with that name, but we did.
And your band continued to do more talent shows and stuff like that?
A lot of talent shows.
So, ultimately, sometime in the late 60s, your group finally, well, actually, maybe before that, your group finally got a record deal at some
point? Yes.
So when's the first time and the first record label your group ended up hooking up with and recording for?
Wow. We were at St. Lawrence Records. We were at Wonderful Records.
So how did either of those two things happen?
Just from being around people in the business. Chicago was, during that time, as they used to say, the number one record market. And you look at all of the artists that were here. And during that time, WVON was the world premiere, as they said, voice of the Negro. That's what WVON stood for.
Okay.
During that time. And so it was like community base where you could hear the Chicago music. You know, as they say, the soul music being played on VON that you could not hear on other radio stations.
So, were you first with Wonderful or first with St. Lawrence?
We went to St. Lawrence prior to going to Wonderful.
Do you remember who hooked you up at St. Lawrence? Was it Monk Higgins or
Monk Higgins?
Okay,
Monk Higgins.
So how did was that while you were still in high school?
Yes, we were still in high school.
So where did he see you guys and hook you up with the label?
You know, how did we really meet Monk Higgins? You know, during that time, you would just be around so many people that were in the business. If you were in the business, you were just constantly introduced to people. But Monk Higgins was a very good friend. Matter of fact, when we wind up recording for ABC, we drove Monk, he bought a brand new Cadillac, and we drove it from here to ABC in California.
Oh, okay. So did you actually record anything at St. Lawrence?
We did not. We recorded one side for Wonderful, which later Otis Clay wind up recording it, so we kind of lost out on that.
What song was that?
Please somebody take your hand and slap some sense into me.
That's
yeah, we originally did that tune.
But if you get to the chorus, I'll tell you what song. So you said you did that first at Wonderful and then ended up Otis Clay.
Right.
So how did you end up at Wonderful Records? Do you remember who brought you there?
Yeah, I really don't remember who brought us there, but during that time, like I said, we just knew a lot of people.
And that was while you were still in high school
still
also?
Still in high school, yeah.
So then you said you went to, and were you, when you were in St. Lawrence and Wonderful, were you still called the Four Trails?
We were the Four Trails, and then we went to the Mentors.
So, and that was when you were at ABC Records?
Yes.
So how did you get hooked up with ABC Records?
I wind up, and I don't really recall how I first met Barry Despenza. But Barry and I just became really, really good friends, and then we became writing partners. Barry wrote Can I Change My Mind for Tyrone Davis. And
and he produced one Tyrone record on ABC at that time, too.
Right, and then he wound up recording Four Sides on my group that unfortunately was never released.
So you said you knew, and was that was you were out of high school at that time?
Just getting out of high school, yeah.
Were you guys trying to do music full time at that point?
You know, working part time, but we were doing a lot of different shows.
Okay,
a lot of different shows. We were working with Herman Williamson managed my group, and Sylvia Taylor during that time. Herman managed the original Regal Theater.
Okay,
so I wind up working at the Regal Theater. Okay, with him, started out as an usher and worked with him all the way until we closed the doors, matter of fact, at the Regal Theater. But we were blessed through that connection to be on shows there at the Regal with James Brown and the Jackson 5 and Joanne Garrett, a lot of different artists.
So so you hooked up with Barry, and he took you to ABC. And you said you changed your name?
Changed our name.
Whose idea was that?
A lot of times when you go to different record labels, for some reason they want to change the name. I don't know if it's just so they'll have access.
They'll own the ownership
of the name or whatever.
So, Barry, and you mentioned that you actually recorded it in California?
No.
You said you drove a Cadillac?
We drove Monk Higgins. See, ABC had their subsidiary office in California.
Okay.
So after we recorded, we needed to go to the branch in Los Angeles, and we drove Monk's car from Chicago, the four of us, to Los Angeles.
Okay.
And when we got to the studio in Los Angeles and walked in the studio, the first somebody we saw was Ray Charles.
Okay.
He was still at ABC during that time, you know, so we got a chance to meet a lot of people. And shortly after that, a lot of things changed at ABC. Barry and Johnny Pate came back into ABC. And for some reason, the material was locked. They did not release it.
So, you recorded the stuff as the Mentors in Chicago.
Yes.
How many sides did you record as the Mentors?
We recorded four sides on ABC.
And what year was that?
68, 69.
Okay. So, and what was the lineup of the group at that point?
Chris Allen, Charles Scott, Arthur Williams, and myself, William Brown.
So you were a four-man group at that point.
Yes.
So you recorded four sides for ABC, and due to some label problems or something, it didn't get released.
Correct.
And so what happened after that? Were you discouraged that your stuff was canned?
Very discouraged, you know, because to put that much work into it and then be blessed to work with all of the magnificent artists that played on that material. Like I say, Maurice White, the lead singer of Earth, Wind & Fire, was a drummer, and he played trap drums on that session, and Fred Ware was one of the producers, arrangers, and like I say, Barry was involved in it, so we had a session that was just out of sight.
Do you remember what studio you recorded at, the ABC material?
You know, at this point, I really don't.
Okay. And then, so after that, you had four sides for ABC that were not released as the Mentors.
Correct.
And then what happened after that? You signed to a different label after that?
We wind up signing to a different label. We wind up going from ABC to Chess Records.
Okay. How did you get to Chess?
We had met Bobby Miller through, like I say, years ago. We recorded a side with Leo Ostell in his basement. And
which wasn't released either.
Which wasn't released.
Okay.
And wind up, we met Billy Davis Jr.
Okay.
And Billy was head A&R man at Chess at that time. And we leaving ABC, had a meeting with Billy, and he was like, "Well, sing something for me." And he wind up managing my group for a short time. But then he left Chicago and became vice president of Motown.
Okay.
Okay, and did that big Pepsi song, I Like to Teach the World to Sing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and worked with him for a while, and Billy left, and things kind of changed over. And then Bobby Miller and I, we were all still really good friends, and Bobby and I were writing partners.
And Bobby is most famous for producing the Dells.
If Walls Could Talk, Little Milton.
And he cut a few solo records. He did the Uncle Willie.
A lot of different
things. Probably the Dells is the most famous act.
Yes.
So you said you just knew him from back in the day, and he became your producer at Chess?
And manager.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you finally ended up recording material that was released at that point.
Yes.
So, first of all, did you change your name again when you got to Chess?
When we got to Chess, we wound up being the Shades of Brown.
Whose idea was that?
That was between us and Bobby.
Okay, so you guys just came up with a new name.
Yeah.
And did the lineup change?
The lineup did change because Chris, Clarence Johnson, wound up introducing us to Earl Roberts. Earl came off of 71st Street. And so at one point we were five members. And then a little animosity kind of flared up and Chris left.
Okay.
Okay, and so Earl came in. So the Shades of Brown became Earl Roberts, myself, Arthur Williams, and Charles Scott.
So that's the lineup on the Cadet album.
That's the lineup on the Cadet album.
Okay, well, we've been talking for a while. Let me actually play one of the tracks off of the Cadet album, and we could talk a little bit more about how this came to be recorded.
Okay.
So this track is called Little Girl. Okay, that was just the Shades of Brown with one of their first released recordings, which came out on Cadet Records, a division of Chess. When did that come out? Around 1970,
about 70 or so.
And that was called Little Girl. And if you're just tuning in, I have Billy Brown, lead singer of the Shades of Brown, talking about his musical career. So we were just talking about how you had just gotten to Chess and you were managed by Bobby Miller.
Bobby Miller.
So on that record that I just played, I felt it had sort of like a Dells type of sound in terms of like the harmony and the sort of backing track. And would you say that you sounded like that already, or that Bobby helped make it sound like that?
I would say so because, like I say, Bobby and I were writing partners. I would be with Bobby just about every day with my guitar, and I'd go to his house and we'd sit down and kind of structure things. But I've been always blessed to be able to put harmonies together. You know, so I would kind of get together with the guys and work out the harmonies with Bobby.
Okay.
You know, but I never thought of it in that context. So
did you know the Dells?
All of the Dells are very, very, very good friends, and ironically wind up, through marriage, being related to Marvin Jr.'s family.
Okay.
And wind up being related to Mickey McGill's family.
Okay. So what was actually the first single that they released? Was it Ho Hum World?
No, the first single that they released was Man's Worst Enemy.
Okay, and this was on the Little Girl was on the B side.
Little
I think
Girl
of that.
Was on the B side of that.
And did that get play in Chicago?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Okay,
it got a lot of airplay.
So Man's Worst Enemy was your first hit record,
more on Cadet label. Yes.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about is, you were on the cadet division of chess, which chess had like a bunch of sublabels. They had checker and chess.
Right.
And cadet was like a lot of their rock groups were on it, and they had like lots of psychedelic stuff, like the Rotary Connection were on it.
Okay.
So a lot of the stuff they did on Cadet was kind of their attempt to cross over to white audiences too.
Okay.
So was that part of the goal of your music, or were you like, was that Bobby Miller's goal to cross over, or was it to get more R&B play?
You know what? I really never thought about it that way. And, you know, listening to the material years later, you know, I can kind of see that. But we never looked at it that way. We were just trying to put together good songs.
So when you said it was a hit, did it get play on R&B radio?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did it get any play on, like, white radio, like WLS or any of the white stations?
You know what? I really don't know, but I do know upon its release, it went international.
Okay.
Okay, I would have people come back and actually show me the album, tell me, Billy, I just bought this in Japan, or,
okay,
you know, a lot of different places. So it was released internationally.
So did they first release the singles? I know they put out three singles on you, and then there was the album. Did they put out the singles before the album came out?
Yeah, Man's Worst Enemy was on a single and then album.
Okay.
Shortly after that.
And the second single was that Ho Hum World, I think. I know Garbage Man was the last single.
Yeah, Garbage Man was the last. Yeah, Ho Hum World did come right after that.
So did you guys start doing more shows as the Shades of Brown?
We did a lot of shows. We toured just about every state in the United States.
Did you do like a review with any other chess artists, or was it mainly just you guys?
Mainly just us with our review, because at one point we had 22, 25 people.
So you had your own band?
We had our own band, 9 pieces, Breakwater, Shades of Brown Review.
Okay. And your own band, were they guys from the Gardens also?
No, they were all across the city. Lee Simmons on Oregon, who did a lot of stuff out of Brunswick. Jerry Holmes on Kungas, Buck on guitar. We had some fantastic. Taboo on bass. We had a fantastic band.
Okay. And you said you toured all over the country pretty much.
Yes.
What are some of the acts that you played with on your tour?
Wow. James Brown, we had a chance to be on his review. Trying to think. I can't really call offhand, but there were so many.
Okay.
Different artists that we had to tell. But a lot of the places that we played, it was our review.
Okay.
Yeah.
And and you still did a lot of shows in Chicago, too?
Yes.
What are the main clubs you did a lot of shows at in Chicago?
Mr. Kelly's, Red Souls, Robert's 500 Room, the Auditorium.
Okay.
Erie Crown Theater.
Okay. So let me play one more track that I like. And this one is only on the album. This wasn't released as a single. This track is called Line Number 2.
Okay.
You promised me you will return to come back to my heart. trusted you, and I took your word, girl. But you never came back home, and somewhere I know
you're crying.
That number one never bothered you. Try getting over line number two. Hey, hey, hey,
you know the life I came from, girl. I was taught to be a good
chance.
And with the women from your world, I didn't stand a chance. But you never came back home, and somewhere I know
you're crying
for
me. I know I never bothered you.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Shades of Brown with a track off of their one self-titled album they released in 1970. The track I just played was called Line Number 2. And if you are just tuning in, I have in the studio right now Billy Brown, lead singer of The Shades of Brown. So we were just talking about how at the time, the group was touring nationally, doing lots of shows, and had released three singles and a whole album on Cadet Records, Division of Chess. So, the group, did you guys record anything else that was unreleased at Cadet?
At Cadet, no. Everything that we recorded was released.
So, how did you end up leaving the label?
Wow. Shortly after the album was released internationally, during that time, Chess owned WVON radio station, and Leonard Chess was coming from the radio station and had a heart attack in the car, and the bottom just seemed to fall out of the whole company. Leonard was like the glue that held Chess together.
Okay.
And so a lot of the producers and the artists, because a lot of the guys out of Earth, Wind & Fire, they were, a lot of them were studio musicians, Louis Satterfield, and you talk about Phil Upchurch and Morris Jennings on drums, and a lot of those mega artists played on just about every recording session that came out of Chess, on the Dale stuff, on Ramsey stuff. And like I say, when the bottom fell out, people just spread out and just went to different places. Bobby wound up going to Motown. The guys in Earth, Wind left. Everybody went to California. And
well, that worked out for them.
Yeah, definitely.
So Bobby actually left Chicago. Did he go to Detroit?
He went to Detroit.
Okay. So you were kind of left without a manager and a producer because he left.
Yeah, okay. Most of us during that time. And then just having inner problems start coming up with the group, because, you know, if you're not working, you know, because we were so used to doing shows, and during that time it was almost, you can almost say, right when the so-called disco era was coming in. So a lot of the artists that were doing live entertainment, they were paying disc jockeys.
Okay. So you actually ended up recording one more single, which is my favorite record that you did, actually, on the On Top label. Was called How Could You Love Him.
Okay.
How long after you left Chess Records did that come out?
Not too long after we left Chess.
Okay.
There were a couple other songs, like I say, Man's Worst Enemy was a big seller off of that Shades of Brown album. Also, Falling in Love Too Hard did pretty good.
Okay.
Off of there. But it was not too much longer after that we wind up doing that single with Calvin Carter on top.
So Calvin Carter was your producer for the single?
Calvin produced that single.
And how did you know him?
Just down through the industry for many, many years. Calvin was the brother of Vivian, who was the owner with Jimmy Bracken that owned VJ Records.
Okay.
So just, like I say, we were around all of the mega artists and producers and songwriters, and just, it was a musical time during that time.
So did he become your manager at that time too?
He did not become our manager, but he came to us and talked to me about doing a song, and that particular song I wrote. And actually, he wanted to do the flip side, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother.
Okay.
Okay, which Arthur Williams, and unfortunately, Art is the only member of the group that is not with us anymore. But Art was the bass singer, also grew up in Oak Hill Gardens. And we recorded that, and then we needed a song for the flip side. And How Could You Love Him, I wrote that tune.
So that wasn't supposed to be the A side?
Exactly.
Was the group membership the same four guys?
The same four guys.
Okay, well, let me play this record and we could talk a little bit more.
Okay.
This is my favorite record you did. The song is great. This is The Shades of Brown with How Could You Love Him. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Shades of Brown with How Could You Love Him, the last single that they released probably around 1971 on the On Top label out of Chicago, produced by Calvin Carter, who was connected to Vivian Carter of VJ Records.
VJ Records.
And so did that record get any play in Chicago?
It did not, to my knowledge.
Okay, maybe he promoted the wrong side.
Yeah.
But you were label mates with the other artist that was on Top was Bobby Rush,
Bobby
right?
Bobby Rush.
Did you know Bobby at the time?
Bobby and I are very good friends to this day.
Did you ever do shows with Bobby?
Yes, down in New Orleans. Bobby and I've... Matter of fact, Bobby and I rode with Bobby from New Orleans to Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
Okay.
So we used to do it. And Bobby and I were writing partners when he did Chicken Heads.
Did you write anything with Bobby that was released?
Recorded, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that record ended up being the last record you recorded that was actually released. Was there ever any unreleased Shades of Brown material? I know we already talked about for Wonderful and ABC you
right.
recorded stuff. Was there any other unreleased
there
stuff?
There was a lot of unreleased stuff. We wind up recording Four Sides with Clarence Johnson,
okay.
who handled Brighter Side of Darkness, Patty and the Love Lights, a lot of different artists.
Was that after or before that record that I just played?
It was, matter of fact, right before that.
Okay, and you were telling me before that one of the tracks that was recorded was a song called Love Like the Seasons.
Love Like the Seasons.
Which I was telling you that he actually put out by the Five Wagers a version of that song.
Okay, and I never knew that. And
it's real obscure. If you didn't, yeah, okay.
I can imagine. But Mickey Farrell wrote that song. Mickey, a fantastic songwriter, co-wrote Catfish for the Four Tops and one fantastic singer. Mickey and Rodney Massey were a writing team. We did a lot of work out of Jerry Buller's writing workshop.
Okay.
But Mickey did two of the tunes. Cheryl and I did two of the tunes. And ironically, Tom, who did all of the strings and horns for Earth, Wind, and Fire, Tom and I are very good friends. He did arrangements on two songs. And Ben Wright, who worked with us as a musical conductor. Ben wrote Fine 100 Ways for James Ingram. He is now Gladys Knight's musical director.
Yeah, I mean, he did some of the Outkast.
He did a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, in fact, the last interview I did was with this guy, Buck, Ray Buckner, and Ben Wright did the strings on his records, too.
Okay.
So, did you cut any other unreleased material besides the stuff with Clarence? And the other stuff we talked about already?
With ABC, that was some of the last things that were not released.
So how long did the group stay together?
Shortly after that, not that long. Initially, Bobby had the notion that we were going to get our own studio. So when PS Recording Studios first came into focus, Paul Serrano was... one of the premier trumpet players at Chess Records.
Okay.
And we were all good friends, and Paul and Bobby made a discussion and got that building over on Calumet, 21st and Calumet, where PS was located.
Okay.
And initially we were in there tearing out the commodes and the walls and everything, trying to get it prepared to be a studio. And shortly after that, there were some other internal problems, and we kind of disbanded, and Paul kept the business going.
Was that in the mid-70s, the early 70s?
In the mid-70s.
Okay. But you continued to do music, right?
Yes.
What are some of the other music things that you've done?
After that, after the Shades of Brown kind of disbanded, I started a project with Cheryl Swope.
Okay.
who was a fantastic vocalist. Cheryl came out of the group The Oncoming Time.
Okay.
And she and I got together and started doing shows. We opened up for Walter Jackson and were on a lot of different things at the High Chaparral here, and did a lot of things with the Sammy Dyer dance school.
So you did stuff as a duo, like a Donny Hathaway, Roberta Flack type thing. Okay.
And E. Rodney Jones named us Two, TWO.
So you were just called Two.
We were just called Two.
So you did shows around Chicago as Two.
Yes.
Was this in the late 70s?
In the mid-70s. As a matter of fact, all the way up until the early 80s.
Okay.
82, 83.
So did you and Cheryl record anything?
We did record, and once again, was never released.
Okay.
Okay.
Was it like a home recording, or you went to a studio?
No, we went to a studio. And like I say, some of the recordings, once again, was arranged by Tom and Ben Wright.
Okay.
Okay.
Were you trying to get onto a label, or were you supposed to be on a label when you recorded?
We were supposed to have been getting on a label. Matter of fact, Cheryl and I signed a contract out of Englewood, New Jersey, All Platinum.
Okay.
Okay. We did sign a contract with them, with Joe Robinson and Sylvia.
Okay.
Okay. And during that time, Ray Goodman and Brown, also which were the Moments, Brooke Benton, Linda Jones, all of those artists was on that label.
You know, there was a Chicago artist on All Platinum in the late 70s. It was Jimmy Mays in the Mill Street Depot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew Jimmy.
Maybe.
Okay. But so there was a little bit of Chicago connection to All Platinum at that time. So, but it just never got released.
Okay.
Yeah, because I know they I know they recorded a ton of stuff over there that never got put out.
Okay.
So, and then did you do any musical stuff after that? After the early 80s?
After that, Cheryl and I kind of separated. She married.
Okay.
Okay, and then she, you know, had other responsibilities. But she and I went into Oakwood Studios, a studio kind of south of Chicago here.
Okay.
And did some recording. But that was some of the last recordings that she and I did together. Then I did some things on my own.
What did you do on your own in the 80s? In the 90s you did stuff?
In the 80s and the 90s.
What are some, did you have any bands, or did you record? What are some of the things that you did?
I had the blessed opportunity coming up with some of the mega artists that I was blessed to get the knowledge in, like Curtis Mayfield being around the studio where I, with the new technology and me being a drummer and being able to play guitar and keyboard, I laid all the tracks myself.
Okay, so you did like home recordings at that point.
Yes.
And you had told me that you played in some bands in like the 80s too. You had mentioned one called Vibe.
Yeah, Vibes was a band that Cheryl and I had touring with us.
Okay.
Okay, so we did the Forum in New York and like say the Erie Crown here, the Auditorium, Mr. Kelly's, Retzo's, a lot of those clubs. Robert's 500 Room was big during that time.
Okay, and are you still involved with music today?
I definitely am. I am currently a music director instructor for the city, for the Chicago Park District.
So how does that work? Do they hold special events, or like what do you do on a day-to-day basis as a musician?
On a day-to-day basis, I teach the kids how to play instruments.
So there's like music lessons that kids can take through the city?
Music lesson that the kids can take, and then I'm also involved with putting on musical events for the city.
Okay. So you give, what lesson? Do you teach piano?
I teach piano.
Okay.
Okay, I teach drums and I teach guitar.
Okay. And you what are some of the events that you put on for the city or help put on?
Just major events. Like now we have the African Festival. Just about musical event that happens. I'm one of few musical directors for our South region.
Okay.
You know, so anything that has anything to do with music in our region, a lot of times I'm involved with.
Okay. Well, let me play one more track that you guys did, and we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is one of the records you said that got a lot of play off of Cadet Records. This track is called Fallen in Love Too Hard.
Now
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Shades of Brown with Fallen in Love Too Hard. And if you're just tuning in, I have Billy Brown here in the studio who has been talking about his music and his career. So, first of all, thanks so much for coming down and telling your story. It's an interesting story.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome.
And do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Wow, no. Well, for you, I would just like to say I thank you for the invitation.
Well, I appreciate hearing anybody's story, and we got to hear about a lot of other pieces of Chicago music that I haven't talked to people about in my show, like Bobby Miller and Cheryl Swope.
Okay.
So you got an interesting piece of Chicago history.
Okay. And for me, you know, it was just so amazing to come from Oak Hill Gardens and be around all of the mega artists that we were blessed to be with, like I say, from Jimmy Reed and Bo Diddley and Curtis Mayfield, Curtis and Jerry came out of Cabrini Green. Maurice and them came off the West Side, Earth Wind.
Okay.
You know, they were the Pharaohs, and like I say, Mark Higgins, and these were people that we would leave Oak Hill and be with just about every day. You know, and even ironically, a lot of people that grew up around me in Oak Hill never really knew my background in music.
Okay.
You know, and so it's a blessing. It's been a blessing.
Well, thanks again for coming and telling your story.
You are more than welcome, Bob.
Okay, well, this last record we're going to play is, I guess, the first single, the biggest single that the Shades of Brown released. This track is called Man's Worst Enemy.